Hour number two, Mustard and Johnson. Happy holidays to all. 11 shopping days till Christmas. Did a little trip to the mall yesterday to purloin a few items for the family. If you are out and about and you want to stay with us and you have a phone, and who doesn't these days, got the radio.com app available for you. Just go to the app store, download radio.com. In the search bar, type in WEEI, and there are a bunch of WEEI choices. Go right to 850 ESPN on WEEI, and there we are. We're here each and every Saturday. I think this is our seventh show since making the move from FM to AM. And if you want to call us, talk about the Pats, anything else on your mind, it's 617-779-0850. We have dissected and analyzed the Patriot woes. If you missed our number one, Larry, not keen on the Patriots' immediate future with the offense stalling each and every week, even in their wins. You're right in a lot of ways. In this five-game gauntlet, they did not look good in wins against the Eagles and the Cowboys from the NFC East, but they won. Basically because the other team was more inept offensively than the Patriots were. But these games against Houston and Kansas City and Baltimore were troubling. If you want to be as objective as you can, maybe I'm the emotional one. Maybe you're being very cold and calculating in your assessment of the Patriots, Larry. Maybe I'm thinking that as long as Tom Brady is the quarterback, in spite of all the deficiencies, and Bill Belichick is the coach, in spite of all the problems, they're going to find a way because they did it last year. And until someone knocks them off when it matters, not in the regular season, but the postseason, I still think the Patriots are dangerous. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I still believe it.
Well, the other problems that you seem to be eliminating, and I understand you really focus more on the here and now, but the more I talk to people out there, they feel that Brady's going to be leaving. And again, with the wisdom of Belichick, who refuses to give any information about anything, the trade he made with the 49ers for Garoppolo was absolutely outrageously bad.
You know he was forced to do that.
He didn't have to give him away for nothing. Nobody else out there could have offered him a one.
Was that a two? Was it two, right?
It was terrible. Yeah. I don't know. Whatever it was terrible. And, of course, he doesn't feel necessary to give any information about anything. And that whole situation was a mess.
Yeah, I can understand. You know, in spite of winning three Super Bowls in the last 5 years, when you see Garoppolo on Sunday, that was the game of the year. Did you see any of that game?
Oh, it was a great game.
That was an unbelievably back and forth. And, you know, we've been lucky, you know, even if you don't have the Sunday ticket as I do or Red Zone, just those two games that were, one was on four, Buffalo and the Ravens, and the other game was on 25, 49ers and Saints. And those were two great games.
Great games.
Yeah, more of a defensive struggle in Buffalo, but talk about a shootout extraordinaire down in the Superdome. And that makes it even worse for a Patriot fan to see Garoppolo and the 49ers. They got the great defense. You know, the big knock on the 49ers was that if they're going to get to a Super Bowl and win, they're going to have to do it with defense. And then what does Jimmy G do? Scores, what, 48 points, including the game-winning field goal. And the other thing is we have the new Gronk in George Kittle.
That play was amazing.
That's the play of the year.
Face mask, yeah. And he's just dragging a guy down the field.
Yeah, that was the play of the year. And, you know, my son and I were watching that game, and after the Saints score the touchdown with, what, 51 seconds left, Bryson turns to me and says, this game isn't over. The way this game's being played, this is far from over. Went right down the field and got the easy field goal to win that. So that makes it even more frustrating because there's Jimmy G. There's the future of the Patriots, but he's 3,000 miles west. And, you know, if Steve in the car was talking to us earlier, I don't know where that story comes from. Can you see Tom Brady wearing a Chargers uniform?
If that's where Giselle wants to go. See, the thing with him becoming a free agent, believe me, she will weigh in on that. And they already purchased a new house, and they're going to try and have their other house on the market forever. They'll try and sell that one. But believe me, she will have input as to where they go from here. And he doesn't seem to bother by it. I think he feels, and I agree with him, he has sacrificed his salary and the like for years with this team,
right,
never opting for top money. And I think he wants to get paid now on the way out the door. And if they don't want to do it, you know, he'll go elsewhere.
Well, we know Tom Brady's a competitor, and when he has to, he can make the big play. The big play with his legs on Sunday on, what was it, 4th and 8, runs for 17 yards.
That was nice. That was different.
And that looked as if, after that play, didn't you feel as if the Patriots are going to win that game?
Well, he had some passion, which I love about him. Belichick motioned first down on the sidelines. The whole stadium erupted. That's all people want. Just act like you give a damn, you know? And I think Brady's always been like that. And Belichick is capable of being like that. Nobody's mad at anybody if you go out there and you do the best you can to play the best you can. I mean, that's... But there are some side stories. I think watching the Celtics-Sixers game the other night and seeing Horford on the sidelines, it is painful when you see some of these players that you once had and they move on. It's painful because there aren't that many of them around to replace them.
Well, if you look at it, and while the Ravens were putting on a show, Lamar Jackson pretty much cementing his MVP award with 5 touchdown passes against the lowly Jets. I was flipping back and forth. I imagine you were, too.
I was, too. Timeouts and the like.
And they played a very competitive, particularly in the first half, where they had the lead most of the first half. But Embiid went off in the second half, and that pretty much exposed what really is, we all knew, was going to be the Celtics problem this year. They don't have any kind of interior presence. That's the problem with the Celtics. They got a lot of twos and threes. They got a lot of guys who can play the perimeter. And this has been a problem in the Brad Stevens era. And it was certainly exposed by Giannis last year in the second round of the playoffs. But if B plays like that, who's going to stop him on the Celtics? Who is there? There's no Al Horford to do that. Who's going to do that?
And that kid from... The 7'6" kid, he doesn't.
Taco's not going to do it.
Yeah, he's not ready.
He's obviously rough around the edges. He hasn't really played the game that much. He played, you know, the only full game. He played a great game against Zion in the NCAA playoffs last year for Central Florida. He really did intimidate Zion. Zion could not dominate offensively like he has in the past when you have a 7'6 guy swatting away balls or just, you know, disrupting things in the paint. It would be fantastic if the Celtics could get him up to speed, but he's not ready to
see the
compete.
Difference with Jackson, how I love the kid, is not just his ability, but, and you remember the playoff game last year, he stunk. He was absolutely...
Are we going back to football now? Yes. My head is spinning. I'm sorry.
We're covering all the sports. He stunk. He was terrible. And then during the offseason, he must have worked on his passing game because he came back, and he really is a decent passer now. So then when you flip back over to Ben Simmons, he still doesn't know how to shoot. And I don't understand how you can have a whole summer off, you can hire a shooting coach or whatever, and he has not done that.
Well, we've had this argument for years, and we had this argument about Rondo years ago.
That's a big difference.
And other players. I think if you get to the NBA and you're not a great shooter, very few become really good shooters by the time they're at the professional level.
See, the difference is, we can argue about Rondo, but the difference with Simmons is we don't even know. We don't know how good he could be. He just, he doesn't even try that much.
I don't think he just has no confidence in his outside
game.
Well,
that's why you hire, whatever Jackson did during the offseason to get much better with his passing, This kid Simmons, he's just, you know, why wouldn't he have hired a
shooting
coach? I'm sure he
does. See, I think he does. You don't think he was just sitting around?
I don't know. No. He looks like he was.
No, if you're someone in the Philadelphia organization, obviously you're going to work with this kid as much as you can in the shooting department. Stretch out. You know how many three-pointers he took last year? I think he took one three-pointer all last year, and he's a point guard?
Yeah.
I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. If I'm watching Kemba Walker, quote-unquote, guard Ben Simmons in the game on Thursday night, it's almost like you don't have to play defense at all. The guy, you know, obviously handles the ball well, can pass the ball well. He's a starter, but you'd like to believe that anybody who's a backcourt player in the National Basketball Association could be somewhat of a threat from the outside, and he obviously isn't that. So I think the Celtics are, you know, going to the Celtics now, who've also, like the Patriots, have lost two in a row, and I think they were exposed a little bit in these last couple games, losing to Indiana, who is, you know, Indiana is a competitor. Last year they didn't have Oladipo in the playoffs, and the Celtics beat them in four games, but the Pacers were competitive in those four games. So losing on the road there, then coming on the back half of the home and the away and home, the back-to-back games, losing at home to 76ers the way they lost. And this is going to be the problem. So you play the 76ers and the Bucks most likely in the postseason. You have to stop two big guys. You're going to have to stop Embiid and Giannis in consecutive series if you want to get to the NBA Finals.
And don't forget, when they add Horford on the floor, he's got a nice outside shot, Horford. And he's not bad defensively.
Right.
The other thing that bothers me is Gordon Hayward, it seems like every time you turn around, the guy's hurt. He got hit in the eye last night, and he was out for a little while.
A little bit. That was Thursday night.
Yeah.
He was out. And you'd like to believe if he ever gets a healthy stretch that he's going to make a contribution. You like Tatum and Brown, but if you're looking ahead and you're thinking, okay, what are the Celtics going to do this year to get by Milwaukee A and most likely the 76ers B, they do need a big guy. The problem is, who's going to give them that big guy? Who is out there? And what are they going to have to give up to bring somebody who can be a physical presence in the paint? That's a big problem.
I keep watching Robert Williams when he's out there, but he's not out there that much.
Because he's not going to give you more than, what is he worth, 10 to 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Tops? Is Tice a legitimate center? I don't think he is.
No.
No, that's the problem. Losing Al is big. There's no question about that. But even with Al, they always had problems in the rebounding department. They were one of the worst rebounding teams in the league. Al would give you that great medium-range jump shot from the foul line in key situations.
Does Cantor excite you?
Not at all. As a matter of fact, I mean, I think there was a lot of hope that Cantor was just going to step right in. He's not getting a lot of minutes.
No.
So we're going to talk a lot about the Celtics. And I know it's kind of early to be worried about them with the Patriots winding down the regular season. We'll talk some Celts and some NBA with Steve Bulpet of the Boston Herald coming up in a few minutes. Later on, we'll break it down with our almost regular football contributor, Karen Garigian, also of the Boston Herald. And, of course, your telephone call, 617-779-0850. And I keep on asking, I guess people are not as down in the dumps about this and as melancholic as you are, Larry. You're downright depressed about the Patriots and everything that's going on.
I think it's depressed, but I think if you're going to make a commitment to sit down and watch these games, then you get involved. Sure you do.
Right. To be a fan is to be involved. If you're not emotionally involved when you're watching your hometown team, then, you know, why even bother?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Maybe people are just resigned. Maybe they just, the writing is on the wall, and they understand that, you know, they've been very fortunate to see Brady and Belichick combine for these six Super Bowls, and maybe it's just a little bit too greedy to ask for a seventh, and they realize, they see the end is near. Tom is no longer the quarterback he once was, and this team is incapable of scoring a lot of points. Maybe they just, you know, they can deal. They can see the end, and it's not so bad.
I hope they're not oversaturating the game. What is it, Saturday the 20th? I don't know.
It's a week from today.
Yeah, they play three games on Saturday.
What they do usually, once the Army-Navy game is over, And in the last 2 weeks of the NFL season, there's no more college football until the bowls. So the NFL takes over Saturday. They've been doing that for years. And the Patriots have played Saturday games. It's usually in the last couple weeks. The last college game of the, quote, regular season, I guess the Army-Navy game this afternoon at 3:30, which you can hear over on the FM side. And then the NFL takes over. So I have tickets for that game. I'm actually glad they're playing on Saturday. I'd rather go to a Saturday game. They're playing at, what, 4:25 on Saturday.
Who are they playing?
Buffalo. That's a good game. If they don't run the table, that's the game that will prevent them from doing that. Obviously, they're going to beat these woebegone Bengals and Dolphins. But Buffalo, Buffalo's what, one game behind the Pats?
Buffalo's not bad.
No.
They really are not bad at all.
Right. And they have a game. They have a very big game against the Titans. They're on Sunday Night Football. Can you imagine that? Sunday Night Football, the featured attraction, the flex game, the Bills and Titans are your featured game on the most watched television program in America. Buffalo Bills, the Tennessee Titans. And that has big-time playoff and wild-card implications. So that's the game. They get by them.
You know what's going to be interesting to watch over the next couple of years? How these teams emerge, like how they develop. What style do they end up taking on? Because it's interesting. More of these teams might start looking for running quarterbacks. If you can figure out a way to protect them and keep them from getting the big hits, then I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see, you know, how these teams develop. Because it's, like I said, Tannehill, I never forget the book on him always was, he's a terrific athlete. He's a terrific athlete. I don't know how his passing is, but he's a terrific athlete. And I think some of these teams might start dabbling in that area, trying to get a couple of these kids that can run a little bit.
Is it a fad, or do you think this is the future?
See, I don't know. Yeah. That's a great question. Don't know.
Well, you look at the top four MVP candidates. Number one, Jackson. Number two, Russell Wilson. Number three, probably Deshaun Watson or maybe Patrick Mahomes. So all black quarterbacks, all mobile quarterbacks, but guys that can also throw the football as well.
As you consider Aaron Rodgers a...
He'd be five.
Five. Scrambler.
He can do it with his legs when he needs to.
Right.
But the future of the National Football League are those four gentlemen. Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson. I think the league is in very good hands with those four quarterbacks. The problem, again, it goes back to the way you're feeling about the Patriots. The future is happening a lot more quickly than a lot of Patriot fans had planned on. Brady's demise may be happening sooner than we thought. And I think that's the way you feel. And these guys are ready to replace Brady. They're ready to replace the Patriots. And it could happen this year. Very well could happen this year. And I think that's...
Yeah, Mahomes started last year doing that. And Jackson, of course, emerged this year.
Right. I'll tell you what. I would not count out the Chiefs. I know that they're right now, they were the flavor du jour last year.
Oh, they're loaded. Their roster is loaded.
Right. Although I give the Patriot defense a lot of credit. They made some great halftime adjustments against the Chiefs. The Chiefs looked like they were ready to blow the Patriots right out of the building, and they did nothing in the second half and had to hold on. I give the Chiefs defense a lot of credit because they're playing much better football than they were in the beginning of the season. And if you're a Patriot fan, you want the Chiefs to play Baltimore in the second round. Probably not going to happen. They're probably going to end up playing here.
Boy, what a game that would be.
But the most likely scenario, if the Ravens hold on to the top seed, they would play the winner of Houston and Buffalo. Pats would play Kansas City. The winner of Kansas City and the Titans, most likely KC. But the Titans have already beat KC. So one of the interesting things this year, all the teams in the AFC who are going to be in the postseason have played each other. So whoever wins, it's going to have to beat that team a second time.
I think San Francisco and Baltimore would be a heck of a Super Bowl.
Well, we saw it when the two Harbaughs went at each other way back in the Colin Kaepernick era, back in February of 2013. It may happen again. 617-779 0850 is the telephone number. It is Mustard and Johnson. We'll talk some hoop with Steve Bulpet of the Boston Herald. Coming up, your phone calls as well. We'll be back right after this. Mustard and Johnson Sports Radio, WEEI 617-779-0850. Talking a lot about the New England Patriots as they prepare for their big showdown, with or without tape, on the Cincinnati Bengals tomorrow, as I mentioned in the trim. Larry, this is the first time in almost 2 months the Pats have played a 1 o'clock game. Being the Patriots, they play a lot of night games. They play a lot of 425, so...
I said they might be playing a lot of them next year.
They very well could. Obviously, the Patriots are still one of the prime attractions. You may hate them, but the rest of the country tunes in all the time.
I don't hate them. I just want them to go out
and
play
you
football.
Don't hate them. I'm talking about the rest of the country.
Well, they give you a reason to.
Right, but everybody loves an antagonist. Everybody loves the villain. There is no Wizard of Oz without the Wicked Witch of the West. There's no Star Wars without Darth Vader. There is no NFL without the New England Patriots, and they are a ratings bonanza, so very few 1 o'clock games. Obviously, the 425, the game of the week for either CBS or Fox, NBC on Sunday night, and so they have the 425 next week on NFL Network. 1 o'clock CBS, we'll be tuning in. But meanwhile, let us switch gears and talk a little Celtics, as we have done, dabbling a bit. And our basketball correspondent, Steve Bulbet, how are you doing over there? Got a little cold? Can we give you anything?
I'm heartened to see that the years haven't dulled your powers of perception.
I am Captain Obvious, if there ever was one.
You sound like Barry White.
I hope he's doing better than Barry White is these days.
I hope he is, too.
So, Celtics...
Yeah, you just gave me a great karaoke idea for tonight. Thank
hey, listen, go in the room and fix a hot toddy.
Yeah, what does a basketball writer do when the basketball team is off for 5 days? I guess there's the answer. You do some Barry White karaoke on a Saturday night.
And you wake up in the morning and cough up a lung.
Hey, what is it like covering this team this year compared to last year?
You mean with an earthling at point guard?
Yes.
There's definitely a different vibration around the team. Everyone has talked about that. It's a different deal. And it's not just, we joke about Kyrie, but it's not just a Kyrie thing. There's a whole different thing going on, and I think it's, the young players are a year wiser, and I think that was a very important step that this team needed to take as well.
Horford, I thought the fans were pretty classy last night, giving him a nice ovation and stuff. Does he enlighten any as to why he wanted to get out of there? Was it the money? Was it what was it?
Well, yeah, I mean, as I remember running at the time, originally the idea was he was going to opt out of the final year, stay with the Celtics to get 3 years, mm-hmm. and be a little bit more team friendly with the first year, but get longevity and more money overall in the longer run. But Philadelphia came up with 4 years at big money, and the idea of getting to play next to Joel Embiid, not needing to be the guy in the pivot, I think really appealed to Al. I know it did, and so that's why he took off.
Yeah, he wanted to be a four rather than right?
Right. I mean, it's let's see. I can get beat up or I cannot get beat up. Which do you choose?
Well, the Celtics are still in search of a five, although Tyson Kanter did combine for 36 offensively. Joel Embiid went off, particularly in the second half, and once again exposing a problem we all knew when it happens against a team that you have to get by to get to a conference championship or even to an NBA title series. Is there anything that Celtics can do to shore up that situation interiorly for them?
Well, I think it's a strong bet that they'll look for moves and trades. See what any large people on teams that aren't going anywhere. If anything shakes loose that way, as far as a guy that has real size and can play that kind of physical defense, the only potential they have really on roster. I mean, Cantor can do it at times, but the only guy they have on roster that's got that kind of potential would be Vincent Poirier. And he's, first year in the league, he's still getting up to speed on things. So that's a pretty big ask. I think I wrote this for the year that they've got to hope somehow that by February, March, he might be able to handle some of that if they're unable to trade for someone else. Because we looked at it before the year. You knew that interior defense was going to be an issue. And it's not just whether a big guy on another team scores on you in the painted area. It's how much attention you have to pay defensively to that. And does it open up guys on the perimeter? I think you saw some of that Thursday against Philadelphia, where you have to send an extra guy toward Embiid, or guys are wary of him, and it leaves people open on the perimeter for squared up open three-pointers.
I'm surprised with the Lakers in terms of when you look at their front line and what they have. I think they're doing pretty well in that area, and Dwight Howard seems to be getting it this year.
Yeah, well, it was the odd say it would happen eventually. look, you've got two of the best, five or six players in the league, two of the best five players in the league anyway, on your team. And it's when that structure is set, it's pretty easy to figure out where you fall in line on the food chain. I think that if you look at that issue, that was a huge problem with the Celtics last year. You had guys that probably thought themselves they were worthy of a bigger role, or that they were more important to things. And it really never fit. They never really committed to this is our hierarchy and this is how we want to play.
Well, you look at that game. I was watching a lot of the Laker-Miami game. Now, the Heat are surprising me. I didn't think they'd be off to, an 18-7 start, and they were very competitive, had a chance to actually beat the Lakers last night. So I'm looking at the East, and, the Celtics right now fourth in the league at 17-7 in the conference, I should say. And, when it comes playoff time, there is a lot of teams to get around. And starting with the Bucks of 17 in a row right now? I mean, there's some, we knew that the Bucks were going to be big. I didn't know if they were going to be 23-3, particularly after Celtics beat them early in the season coming back from big point. So how are you looking right now at the conference and where the Celtics fit into the East so far?
Well, I think kind of the same way as at the start. I said there's two Celtic teams. There's regular season Celtics and playoff Celtics. And regular season Celtics, I figured, were going to be fine because they've got depth, they've got skill in their depth, and they're going to play hard most every night, or just every night in this league. And doing that alone gets you 40 wins in the NBA. And I figured that they would be better than that. But that's regular season. That's showing up every night and playing hard. Playoffs are a different thing. When a team gets to focus in on you and expose your weaknesses, it becomes a different issue. So, you figure that the same story then is the same story now. They've got between now and the end of the year to get their stuff together to figure out if they can be that kind of a possession for possession team, the way the game works in the playoffs. But that's when Stevens talks about they need to get better, he's absolutely right. They need to improve that aspect of their game where they can close games out better, where they can, the game in Indiana and the game the other night were examples of how it comes down to each possession and how well you can execute. And they had issues in both.
Yeah, that was really a playoff-like atmosphere for a game in early, two games in early December. Not that you're going to have to play back-to-back, and that's always tough. At least if you got the back end at home, that's a little bit better. But I think there is some concern there. Good point. In crunch time, Celtics did not come out on the right end in two consecutive nights, and it's only going to get worse, no question about it.
Well, I think it does speak well for them. What we talked about for regular season Celtics anyway, and just their overall attitude, that they kept that as close as they did on Thursday, because right now Philadelphia is the better team,
right?
And the fact that you were on the second night of a back-to-back after a difficult game the previous night, there are schedule losses in this league. I remember talking to Jimmy Butler a week and a half ago that when Miami came in here, that was a schedule loss for them. They had played the night before an overtime game in Toronto, was it?
Yeah.
And they were going to run out of gas at some point. And Denver came in a couple days later and lost because they'd played the night before, even though I'm not sure a game against the Knicks in New York necessarily qualifies
exactly.
as, I think a Peloton ride might be more difficult.
Hey, wait a minute. They won last night in Sacramento. The Knicks won. Bulletin. It was just in.
And Sacramento's done pretty well, actually, this year. So.
Hey, speaking of getting better, how's Tatum and Brown developing this year?
I'd be really encouraged about Jaylen Brown in terms of knowing when to go and when not to. It really is about picking your spots and knowing what the right play is. I think you're seeing less of the pounding of the ball from Tatum than you did last year. But, I'd rather see him, I'd rather see him as more of a finisher than a dribble five times or six times and make your move kind of guy. I think it started to show when Hayward was out that the ball movement had slipped a bit. When this team is at its best, you'll see the ball moving and the scores will come as guys just catch and finish. That's the way I think this team has to play. Ball movement is everything in this league, and ball movement and player movement. Passing and cutting, as simplistic as it sounds, is still what gets it done because, I've always said it's if you come down and you move the ball and you make the defense go side to side, even if you don't score, there's a value to that possession because you've made the defense work. You've made the other team work. And if you're moving the ball properly, you're in better floor balance, so you're back on defense quicker.
Kemba Walker, just from observation from where we sit, but he seems to be the consummate leader, captain, leader, seems to be very upbeat all the time and encouraging other players. Is he that kind of player?
Yeah, when they made the move, it was pretty clear that Kemba was coming here. I've known Jim Calhoun for a long time, and I spoke to him at that time, and I said to him, Kemba probably isn't as talented as Kyrie, but he might be a better fit for this team. And Calhoun said, leadership and being a good teammate are talents. So that was kind of like, okay, yeah. And then you see it in action, and it's, point for Calhoun there. The way the better players approach the game on your team has a huge effect. Let's go back to San Antonio. If Tim Duncan didn't allow Greg Popovich to yell at him. And as a star player, he could have said, "I ain't taking this." But if he didn't, if he doesn't allow Greg Popovich to yell at him, have number one, have we? And I've mentioned this to Popovich. Have we ever heard of Greg Popovich? He said, he goes, "No, I'd be back at D3 coaching." You know, it, and that effect, it goes team wide, because any other player on that team figures, hey, he's our best player. If he can get yelled at, and if he's taking it, you know, what's my option? I got to, you know, same thing here. And I think that all plays in, and you know.
Well, that's what Heinsohn did, didn't he? With Abeck, he allowed him to yell at him.
Yeah, but he wasn't their best player. Sorry, Tommy, I love you, but
yeah,
you know,
but he couldn't.
But your point, I'm joking, but your point is absolutely well taken. You know, you have to have people. No, it's not just someone to get yelled at, but it's a guy that leads. In the old days, before the NBA became, you know, the CIA, you used to be able to go into practices and sit and watch. And I remember sitting at Laker practices, and Pat Riley would say, "Okay, let's move on to the next thing." And Magic Johnson says, "No, guys, let's run that one again." Mm. When you're a head coach and you've got Magic Johnson saying, "No, let's run that one again, guys," you know, life is good.
But you always thought of Riley as the guy that was in total charge. He wasn't going to take any crap from anybody. But obviously, Magic was running the show, drove Whitehead out of town.
I wouldn't say running the show, but I mean, but being able to step up and you know, and when you've got that kind of leadership from within,
sure,
then, you know, you can look in your classes, right? When you've got students in your class that are stepping up and leading things and being attentive, then that, I would guess, changes the tenor of your class.
You are very perceptive, young man. I always said this, I was only as good as the kids in my class. And you could say that for any NBA coach. I was watching Frank Vogel last night. And, you know, here's a guy that had some success in Indiana. A lot of people question whether he could control LeBron in L.A. So far, so good. I mean, they're 23-3. They've won 13 in a row. They're just running roughshod over everybody. But, you know, there's a perfect example. I mean, any coach who's coaching LeBron has to take second fiddle, mostly. He's not going to be running the team. It's still going to be LeBron's team. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, there's an example of a guy that's, you know, that's not of the Tim Duncan ilk, but he's, you know, so damn good that, you know, they get the option. When you're that good, you get the option to how you want to be coached.
Right. But my point is, you know, and I talk about this with my son all the time, who's still upset about Kyrie's tenure in Boston. I said, think back. Kyrie did not want to play with a guy that was taking him to an NBA title series each and every year. And when he wasn't there, he was basically a cellar dweller. So that tells you everything about Kyrie. They didn't want to play with LeBron. And I can understand it must be difficult. It was difficult playing with Michael as well. But that's just the way it is in the National Basketball Association. The other team I wanted to ask you a little bit about, besides the Lakers, the Bucks. Does this team's, there's a certain inevitability about this team this year. They had the Clippers on the ropes in game three. They went into double overtime, lost, and never won another game. Do these guys seem like they're headed almost, you know, without too much of an obstacle to the NBA title series this year?
Look, the Bucks are very, very good, but I think there's a little element of regular season Bucks, postseason Bucks here as well. Among the great things you can say about Giannis Antetokounmpo is that he is not satisfied. He is a ridiculous worker, and he's a guy that wants to go out and needs to go out every night and compete. And if you look at the greatest players, it was not only their physical skills but their innate competitiveness that put them over the top. I mean, Michael Jordan would have been a great player, but his competitiveness, the same kind of stuff that led him into gambling and all these other issues, his competitiveness is what made him, you know, the Michael that we know. Larry Bird, you know, we don't have to go there to understand what competitiveness meant for him. So that's going to be there. That's a team that's going to whose best player is going to give it all, put it on the floor every night. I do think that. I mean, every team in the East has issues. The Bucks losing Malcolm Brogdon to Indiana. I think that's going to be an issue come playoffs. Eric Bledsoe, there'll be a lot on his shoulders, and I'll be interested to see how that works. The Celtics had the formula against them last year.
One game.
They did it in one game, and then they didn't do it again. And the formula is, excuse me, you cough in their face, get them sick. No. you beat up Giannis and see what happens around him. Get them out of their comfort zone. Get them out of their normalcy. Try to play it that way there. And again, I think missing Brogdon's going to hurt. I think Philadelphia's going to have issues playoff-wise as well. They've all got problems that could be come into greater relief in a postseason series where, again, the other team gets to sit and concentrate on you.
No question about it.
Last question from me. We know about David Stern's malady and what he's going through right now, and we all pray for him, and I hope he recovers and gets well. But how do we think about him in his years as commissioner and what he did for the league?
Well, I think he made a huge contribution to the league in that he understood what needed to happen. He understood that the importance of television and media. I mean, Peter Rozelle was a PR guy. He understood that as well. Mm-hmm. But excuse me, there were a lot of factors too that helped David Stern grow the league the way he did. Remember the league was, you know, in bad shape in the late 70s. And even early 80s, there was talk about contracting teams. And then you had, number one, Magic and Larry come in off the most popular NCAA championship game in history. And they go to famous franchises on each coast. That helped the league. Michael helped the league. And excuse me, a part that doesn't get talked about nearly as much as it should, or a person who doesn't get talked about, is Larry Fleischer. The agent was also the head of Players Association back then, and he's the one that said, okay, look, we'll take care of this. We're going to do a salary cap. The players will go along with this. We'll do that. And that gave ownerships a measure of cost certainty, and that in business is everything. Knowing, you know, what your revenue streams are and knowing what your costs are, being able to define that allows you to go to banks and borrow against what you've got coming in. It allows you to do all those kind of financial numbers games that people wealthier than us have mastered.
Yeah, I look at Stern as the second greatest commissioner of our lifetime. Rozelle, number one, revolutionized the use of television in the early 60s. We, you know, understood that all the games being on network television was instrumental. But Stern is solidly number two behind Rozelle, and probably used a lot of the philosophies and policies of Rozelle in the NBA. And he came along a couple of years after Magic and Larry. I think he came in 84, wasn't that?
He was working with the league at that time,
lawyer,
as I was coming up.
But he had the
advantage. Well, again, you had cable television, like the Big East. You know, was the league at the right time because you had ESPN and they needed product. You had cable needing product. Huge stuff.
And I think you talk about Fleischer. Earlier with Larry O'Brien was still the commissioner in the 50-50 split with revenue sharing, and they worked together, and that set a very good template for the NBA. And, you know, I have a 14-year-old son, and the two leagues he cares about are the NFL and the NBA. The kids love the NBA, even probably more so than adults. You go to all these games. There are kids everywhere at the Boston Garden.
Yeah. but they need well-heeled adults to afford the tickets. I mean, it was. And I wrote about this a couple weeks ago. It was a Sunday Notes column thing with Mark Cuban, and he was talking about how kids consume media now. It's a YouTube thing with them, and they're watching NBA highlights. Mm. And you know that's where it goes. And from which platforms are people consuming your games? And you know. As long as there is, you know, the different social media and, you know, for the regular people, we're talking about cable as regular, which it is now, but the TNT show with Charles and Kenny Smith and Shaq and Ernie Johnson, you know, those things sell the game. And once that stuff gets out there, people want to watch famous people. I mean, otherwise, explain the Kardashians to me.
You know, we need another hour to do that, at least.
Yeah, you get famous for being famous, but once you know you get famous for doing things, and you get a persona, and you see players getting their own individual logos and brands. You know, it used to be, you know, you had to play in New York and be near Madison Avenue and be in commercials. Now, you know, the brands find you. You know, it's a whole different world.
Listen, we got to let you go. But I want to know, what are you going to do about this cold?
I think I'm going to bury my head in my pillow and set my alarm for Tuesday.
Listen, take some medicine. We really appreciate you taking the time aside. I know you really are not feeling that well, so we really appreciate it. And we want you to have a blessed Christmas and holiday season and the like. And we really appreciate your time.
And to quote the late, great Barry White, hang on in there, baby. You're going to be all right. Thank you, Stephen.
Guys, be well, okay?
Okay,
you too.
Bye-bye. Steve Volpett, longtime writer for the Boston Herald, covers basketball, Celtics in particular. And I'll tell you what, he's a gamer, taking one for the team today.
He's been doing it a long time, too.
Yeah, playing hurt on Mustard and Johnson. All right, we have 2 hours down. We still have one to go. Love to hear from you at 617-779-0850. We talked mostly Patriots in the first hour. The latest Spygate controversy, the sequel, the Cincinnati sideline. We'll assess the Pats' chances in the last three games. What's going to happen in the postseason? Karen Garigian, Steve's colleague over at the Herald, in the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour. But we want to hear from you. Some phone call action. Open up those phone lines at 617-779-0850. Hour number three on the way right here on Sports Radio WEEI.